It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Sail on, oh my squads of heat. Sail on.
Little bit more impromptu, Leonard Cohen. This is the Wilf's Wednesday afternoon show called Connect the Dots. We'll be connecting some shortly, as soon as our guests arrive. This is Dick Paddock, your co-host and engineer for the show, and we're going to give you a little bit more of Leonard Cohen while we're waiting.
The world against her thigh, and every drinker, every dancer lifts a happy face to thank her. The fiddler fiddles something so sublime. All the women tear their blouses off, and the men they dance on the polka dots. And his partner found, and his partner lost, and it's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time. And the polka dots, and his partner found, and his partner lost, and it's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time. Not we're lonely, we're romantic and sad, at least with acid and the Holy Spirit's crying. Where's the beef? Swimming naked and the summer night is fragrant with a mighty expectation of relief. So we struggle and we stagger down the snakes and up the ladder to the tower where the blessed hours chime. And I swear it happened just like.
Good afternoon. This is Wilp's radio show. We're on every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock. And we are very happy today. We're going to have two guests. Both of them are Wilp sisters. And Wilp stands for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, affectionately known as Wilp. And we're going to start off with Tana Hartman. Tana and our second guest is Heidi Kober, and both Heidi and Tana went to a democracy conference in Wisconsin. And I'm going to let Tana start off telling us about that conference and who sponsored it and the significance of it being in Wisconsin. Oh. Tana, good afternoon. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thanks, Lori. Thanks, Dick. The Democracy Convention was a project of Liberty Tree. The Liberty Tree Foundation was a group that's been around for several years now, and it is uniquely committed to building a new democracy movement for the U.S. Most people, we're used to thinking that we have democracy, but in fact, we don't. We never have. It was never intended to be a democracy, but it is part of the mythology. The Liberty Tree Foundation argues that they provide vital support. I mean, argues they provide vital support to grassroots campaigns for democratic reform in many areas of American life, and they bring the campaigns together to form a united movement for democracy. The Democracy Convention this year, this was the first to be probably not annual, but by within 2 years, they expect to hold another one. And it's one of many initiatives that the Liberty Tree Foundation's been involved in since its founding in 2002. Now, as most of us know, the Liberty Tree was actually originally stood on the Boston Common in Boston, and it was the place where a lot of the revolutionaries gathered. And from there, they would have speeches, and they would talk, and they would march. And one of those marches led them to the docks, where some of the activists dumped some tea into the harbor. When the British came along, they cut the first. One of the first things they did was cut down that Liberty Tree.
Wow!
But it got so many people took up the cry after that. They were so horrified, outraged by that people like Thomas Paine started writing about it, and word of this Liberty Tree spread to around the world. I mean, over to Europe, and people in smaller communities dedicated a tree in their community as a Liberty Tree. And so it's being used again as a symbol. It was both a physical and a symbolic place of gathering for people who were dedicated to and wanted democracy. So that's what they're trying to do again. Now, the Liberty Tree Foundation put this convention together in partnership with a long list of co-conveners that include the Alliance for Democracy and Move to Amend, Veterans for Peace, anyway, I won't go because it's a long, long list. And then there's an even longer list of co-sponsors, and those include things like Code Pink. It was a very important. There were over 200 speakers. There were 8 tracks. There was an entire conference on democratic defense, one on earth democracy, educating for democracy, economic democracy, racial equality, constitutional reform, local democracy, and media democracy.
Okay.
All of those.
We always forget this at the beginning, to tell people to get out there, pen or pencil and paper, because we always try to let you know how to get more information about whatever our subject is. And right now, with this being such, and we could have, I think we're going to need to have at least at some point 3 or 4 programs on this, because there's just so much. But is there a website that people?
There is. You can go Google Liberty Tree Foundation.
Okay.
You can also go to Move to Amend, because basically all of these things were brought together around the issue of corporate personhood and creating democracy out of our corporatocracy.
Okay.
You know, everyone agreed that we are ruled by corporations now.
Mm-hmm.
And this Move to Amend, MTA is the short abbreviation for it, but Move to Amend came together in Mendocino County in the northern coast of California just before the Citizens United decision came down from the Supreme Court. They were anticipating that decision, and they decided to start an educational campaign to let people know what it meant for a U.S. government. And they it has grown now around the country, and they are spreading with initiatives to amend the Constitution, and we'll probably say more about that later. Hi, Heidi. Heidi Kober has just walked in. Heidi was there with me in Madison, Wisconsin, and we both had a wonderful time. It was amazing. It was more than we could keep up with. And even both of us trying to split it up, there was no way we could cover everything. But I just briefly told them a little bit about the convention and the conveners, about the Liberty Tree Foundation and Move to Amend, Heidi. And why don't you say hello.
Welcome, Heidi. Just so people can hear your voice, we'll let you catch your breath and give the floor back to Tana for a little bit. But let's hear your voice.
Well, thank you for having me. And I will gladly share my experiences. I'm still processing because there was, as Tana said, There was so much, and I really wished I could have split myself into several mm-hmm. people, because I had to make hard choices between the different sessions. Everything was so interesting, and the people we met were just awesome. We had a wonderful time.
Okay, and then Tana, we'll get back to what you were talking about.
Oh, well, I was just talking a little bit about Move to Amend, how mm-hmm. that was the central focus here, and there was an organizing workshop and training workshops, multiple training workshops, to get people on board with amending the Constitution. So one of the tracks that I was most interested in was the constitutional reform track, and another was economic democracy. We know at least something about our Constitution, and the Constitution is basically the supreme law of the land. The Constitution basically recognizes the rights of citizens. It does not, which I had not really thought about until in a discussion there, does not necessarily guarantee them, you know. But it does recognize them, and it does not, there are no right, the state has no rights, it has duties, which right. is something we should not forget. It has duties to protect the rights of the people. So for instance, the Citizens United decision is horrendous, partly because of its further inscribing in law the rights of corporations, you know, as persons, and that is something that we need to overturn. Yeah.
And the 2010 elections, this is Heidi, the 2010 elections clearly showed what happens if money becomes equal to free speech. These elections were flooded with corporate money, and we are now suffering the consequences of that. So many people think that participation in self-government is limited to electoral politics. But so much of our lives take place in institutions, in an economy that's very undemocratic, and where we, the people, do not seem to matter at all. And once we saw after the 2010 elections is a rash of bills coming through that are corporate sponsored by, it's called ALEC.
ALEC,
for the American Legislative Exchange Council. ALEC creates so-called model bills that they share with legislators across the nation. And these bills reach almost into every area of American life and directly benefit the corporations. In North Carolina, we saw that, from the voter ID bill to privatizing schools, from gutting environmental protections to cutting benefits to injured workers, from restricting women's rights to criminalizing undocumented workers. All of these bills came from the desks of ALEC.
I think a lot of people don't realize that they do a lot of legislators, especially these new freshman ones in Washington. You know, they're there; it's all kind of new to them. And all of a sudden, here somebody's got it all done for you, done the research for you, and it sounds, if depending on your value system, but it can sound good. And I don't think the American people realize that so many of our bills are not written by our congresspeople and their staff. They are handed to our congresspeople by this organization, ALEC. I only heard about it a few years ago, and it really shocked me.
One of the things that's bothersome to me about ALEC is the fact
that... This is Dick Paddock speaking.
Yeah, sorry. This is Dick Paddock, your co-host and occasional stick in his oar.
Hopefully.
One of the things that bothers me so much about it is, in addition to it being hiding behind the scenes, there is no way to find out who is or is not a member.
Yeah.
And it would seem to me that if the legislators that you elect are members, you should be able to find that out. Jim Hightower, on one of his little broadcasts recently, suggested that the next time you see your state legislator, ask them if they're a member of ALEC and see if they have the grace to blush.
Well, that's a good idea. You know, anyhow, but yes, this is, we're all going to learn something today. This is a continuing education in what democracy is or isn't.
Yeah, for those of you who are interested to find out more, go to alecexposed.org for a closer look. Alec Exposed is a project of the Center for Media and Democracy, which was one of the major sponsors of the 2011 Democracy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin. You know, but what made Wisconsin so different from a lot of states and North Carolina that faced similar assaults on people's rights, that they fought back.
Yes, they did.
And while they may not have won all of the seats that they wanted in the recall elections, they did gain territory, while we in North Carolina are losing territory. And they are continuing to exert the pressure. Recall Scott Walker is on the line. They're mm-hmm. talking about potentially a general strike. So they're not down and out. They're fighting. And I think that's something I felt in the convention too. People were motivated. I think the passive, helpless, learned helplessness that kind of kept the American public in thrall is thawing out. People becoming energized by their outrage and by their anger, and they're ready to do something, channel that energy into not reform. We had one of the panels, we talked about reform or revolution, and definitely the majority of people there were all in favor of revolution. I think we all know that our systems are on the verge of total collapse, and that patching it up will not work anymore. We really have to change the way we live, the way we do business, the way we work, the way we learn, the way we elect our representatives. Everything has to be changed dramatically.
Wow.
And that said, I'd like to add that in one of the sessions I attended, I was surprised because some of the younger people were actually the ones saying that we also need to have reform. And I afterwards was reading Howard Zinn someplace in Howard Zinn, and he said it has to be simultaneous. We can't wait because we have to work within the system we have. We can't wait for it to change, so we have to be trying to reform it, weakening it in some ways. And that's what a lot of some of the economic democracy sessions were about how it's creating these new alternatives to the capitalist economic system that is in crisis and really breaking down, creating those new ones. And one of them says, this is actually Daniel Teagle, who is the executive secretary of the Brazilian Solidarity Economy Forum. And he is writing in, what is this, Injustice Rising, which is the publication for the Alliance for Democracy. But he says, we're termites eating away at capitalism's structural underpinnings so that one day this house will suddenly fall because we have undermined its pillars. And while that is going on, we need people preparing for the revolutionary part of it, too.
And that brings me to the sessions that I attended, which is the local democracy and the earth democracy.
Let me just interject you. Both Heidi and Tana kind of split things up. It was such a rich conference. And instead of overlapping, they each went to different sessions. So you're getting, this is great. We're getting yes. some knowledge and synopsis from different. You yes. focused on earth, local
democracy and earth democracy.
And I did economic democracy and constitutional reform. Now, that is still only 4 out of 8. There were 8 conferences, 8 different conferences that were actually, what did I just do? I just had it on my book here. The Democratic Defense, Earth Democracy, Education for Democracy, Economic Democracy, Racial Equality, Constitutional Reform, Local Democracy, and Media Democracy.
So you can see it was a lot.
Eight or nine.
Yeah.
There was a lot of them, and we could not get to all of them because
that's right.
There was only 3 or 4 days.
And they had over 200 speakers.
You had to choose. So we tried, yeah.
Okay, so Heidi, you were about to say.
So anyway, and I went there because one of the things that I'm very concerned about, you know, that political theater we witnessed a few weeks back when we talked, when they were struggling about raising the debt ceiling. This was a farce. You know, we can always print more money. We can create new financial instruments. We can borrow more. The debt ceiling was artificial. But what we have hit 30 years ago was the ecological debt ceiling. And the problem is we cannot create new Earths. Right now, we are using up 1.5 Earths every year, which means that the Earth requires 1.5 years to replenish the resources that we use and absorb the waste that we create. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone even knowing the fundamentals of math knows that that is not sustainable. And what has happened is that the income inequality that we have witnessed, not just in this country, but globally too, between rich countries and within those countries, the rich oligarchy, they know this. They know that we are hitting, we have hit the ecological ceiling, that there will soon be resource shortages from energy to food to water to arable land. And they have created themselves a gated economy, hoping that when it all falls apart, when we cannot pay our debts to nature anymore, when we have exploited as much as we can, that they will be safe and the rest of us are just left out to struggle for ourselves. We see that already now in Africa. If you see the faces coming out of Somalia, these are the faces we will continue to see. And it's going to start, it's starting in Africa because one of the things is that Africa, even though it has a lot of wonderful farmland, millions of acres have been bought up by China, by India, by South Korea, also by hedge fund managers. There's a big hedge fund in Great Britain, and Yale and Harvard are big investors because they're promising their investors 25% return on those land grabs. Oh. Now, according to what I checked, that Africa has to, it would be forced to, could possibly ship out 80% of its crops to other countries, even if its population is food insecure. So these are the things that are going on, and none of us are exempt from this debt ceiling.
No,
because all of us, these are basic needs that need to be met: water, food, energy, shelter. All of that is at risk. And this is why we in desperately need of a democracy movement, so we will not, when we're at those crossroads, we will not choose a path where a few will have hold most of the resources left and the others are left to starve, but that we come to a way where we will share equally so everyone has enough. And that will mean it will mean a revolution in our thinking, in our lifestyles, and what we think is necessary to live.
Yes.
Heidi started out by saying, for the 30 years ago, we hit an ecological debt ceiling. And at least 30 years ago, Henry Kissinger, actually having recognized something similar, he and, you know, the elites who have controlled this country always, he was quoted as saying, and I quoted him in a show just a few weeks ago, saying that the United States really needs to secure its presence, secure the resources of other lands around the country, around the globe, because he actually said depopulation should be our goal because we are going to need those resources. You know, and that is and that is what they've been doing. This whole control, this whole process for the past 30 or 40 years, probably since World War II, the end of World War II, has been to consolidate control over global resources. And that is coming from wealthy elites in this country and multinational corporations, you know, the elites that own these corporations.
So depopulate those areas. It's a very
allow them to die, basically.
Yeah. You know, this is what it doesn't take a lot of imagination to wonder why they, the times that they pledged to send help, they never quite fulfilled their pledges. And I thought to myself, well, they probably don't give a darn. It's probably to their advantage to have lot of people who be using up the food and air, have them die. I mean, we
yeah, and it's a kind of Darwinism. I mean, it's an economic Darwinism.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, you know, this is why the U.S. has bases all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The militarization. Before this convention, though, I grew up a military brat, and I was aware of bases all around the globe. Mm-hmm. I've always known about that, mm-hmm. and I've known since I came back from Nicaragua when I actually started checking on military bases, you know, throughout South America, and looking at, I got a map at one time that pinpointed, and I was going, oh my God, we're everywhere.
I don't
everywhere.
Think a lot of people realize
how many bases we have around the world.
Was it over 100 or maybe?
I don't remember, but it's a lot, and I should find that again. But I had not realized the militarization that is going on within this country, militarization of the police, and that was one of the sessions, too, that I sat in on here, talking about militarization within the United States, because they are preparing for, there will be rebellions when things get, when, you know, they've already exported all our jobs, you know, they're, well, if they decide to export all our food and our, you know, and keep our resources for themselves or make them, privatize them so we can't afford them, they can expect a reaction from people. Yeah. You know,
there's another way in which militarism matters, and that is the fact that they keep building and redistributing bases, military bases around the country. And if you look at a map, you'll notice that they're concentrated in the southeast, because this is where they expect the militant militias and all to eventually take hold, to say nothing of the fact, of course, this is where the concentration of people of color is. And so they that's the rationale behind the location of bases, according to some stuff I've read. So
well, that's interesting, yeah. But because I had heard that the militias were actually growing
in Colorado,
up in the upper Midwest, mm-hmm. Not the upper Midwest, but mm-hmm. in, you know, the sort of Midwest and yeah. Western states in here.
But
you're
I've also heard
about
that they
people's militias, real, not right-wing militias. You're talking about more people's militias. Is that right? Or
well, to a certain extent. Although, if you look around at the pickup trucks that have the guns hanging in the back window, you'll notice that there's preponderance of them probably in the South.
Yeah, but this is hunting. Yeah, I mean, let's.
Hey, a bullet is a bullet.
Truth,
that's the way they look at it. Okay, we need to stop and take a break now.
Okay.
And announce our underwriter, which is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. We encourage you to go by there and see all the stuff they have that you can't see anywhere else in town or anywhere else in the county, probably. Because it is an independent bookstore that is definitely left-oriented. And
it's also a community resource center.
Right, community resource center they have.
Find out everything that's going on that's progressive.
Other art things going on, not just literature, but poetry and...
And movies, crafts.
Okay. And... we are the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
For Peace and Freedom.
Triangle Branch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us at triangle.org. And as a matter of fact, you can find the bookstore, Internationalist Bookstore, at internationalistbooks.org. And
if you're having some static and having trouble, because this is a low-power station, you can...
And
if
you can, if you have a computer with internet access, you can go on to the station website, which is wcomfm.org, and there's a button there that you can actually click, and whatever's on the air at the time will stream through your computer and come out your speakers. And so, obviously, on Wednesdays at 5 to 6, you want to have that set up on your computer so you can hear us.
Yeah. You know, one of our WILP sisters went, and her radio didn't carry us, so she went and got a little radio 2 weeks ago just so she could listen to WILP's radio show, because she said she thinks it's probably the best best show going. So,
oh, well, that
just
was
a
nice
little plug for our show.
Right.
Okay, now I want to get back to the Democracy Conference in Wisconsin, being reported to us by two of our Wilf sisters, Heidi Kober and Tana Hartman.
And I want to say before we start that Heidi was right. There were nine sessions. There was a ninth one added at the last minute, and it was for representative democracy. And since I happen to believe in participatory democracy very strongly, and I think nothing is going to change until we learn how to govern ourselves, which I think also Mike Ferner has come out in favor of, until we actually learn to participate in our own governance and take active part, that nothing is going to change, that this representative democracy where we let somebody else do it for us is not working. So,
especially if they take big bucks from the corporations and are owed before they even owned it, before they even elected.
Yes.
Talk about our Wilf sisters. I think Women's International League for Peace and Freedom was well represented at the conference. Several of our sisters presented workshops and panels. Mm-hmm. Mary Sepernink.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. She, Nancy Price.
Nancy Price.
Nancy is also.
Kristen Knowles.
Yeah.
So we saw a lot of friendly faces there.
Yes, we did.
And I really appreciated their energy and their contribution.
Yes.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yes, Wilf was also one of the sponsors, one of the co-sponsors for
Good.
This event. Yes.
Excellent.
So. And they're very active in Move to Amend. And we were talking earlier, and I just was thinking you can go to movetoamend.org.
Okay.
www.movetoamend.org.
Okay. And what does Move to Amend mean? I think you were going to tell us, Tana.
It is a move to amend the Constitution,
yes.
Revoking corporate personhood.
Hey.
Yes. When corporations have constitutional rights, the rights of people, of human, living, breathing beings become meaningless. Because how can one human being speak, have the power to speak, how can one human being's power to speak compare with the power of a massive corporation, especially when money has become equated with free speech, and it is no longer one person, one vote. It is basically $1, one vote, and he with the most dollars wins.
Right. But what do they win? And this is, you know, you talked about the termites in the house that capitalism built.
Yes.
One of the things that we're talking about in local democracies, we need to, that's what we can do. The Move to Amend is a campaign, but it will take time. What we can do right now in our community is to build democratic, sustainable, and resilient communities. So when the House of Cards falls down, we have a foundation that catches us and our neighbors and our people in our community. We cannot, you know, I've heard some people say, well, you know, if the right-wingers take over, it would you know, create the collapse that much faster, so why not let them? But we have not built an infrastructure for our communities and to allow people who are already at the fringes right now and barely can make ends meet and barely survive, to throw them under the bus, as the saying goes, is just to me irresponsible and uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
I could not.
It's really easy for some people to say that who are in reasonably comfortable circumstances. But yes, that gives me a chill, that attitude. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, we need to be about building our own social safety net.
Yes, because that's exactly right. Social and economic,
you
know, and
because
political.
Whether or not there is another one out there, I feel fairly confident that the elites will be able to figure out a way to get it away from us, just like they got the money away from us in the TARP and the whole crash. You know, there was a big crash, and a whole lot of people got hurt, but the people who saw it coming and had money to invest came out fine, and they've doubled and tripled their earnings and their capital, and there is one small good side effect, and that is that a whole lot of people have found out about the Koch brothers.
Yes, that's true. And there is a, oh, yes. Well, that is one hornet's nest. One of the things, I think Heidi and I will each say something about the ways in which we can create these locally sustainable democratic communities. The democracy, the economic democracy was looking at some worker-owned cooperatives that have sprung up in Cleveland, which was a really economically devastated area. And they have been doing phenomenal things, really great, and they offer a lot of promise for the creation of new types of economic enterprises to that are based not on profit, the promotion of profit, but I'm creating full employment at providing a living wage, at contributing products and services that the community needs, and making it sustainable. You know, and whether it's goods or services, there are some very good ideas and models out there now. Based on things like Mondragon, but Mondragon, if people will recall, is the huge worker co-op in Spain. Mondragon's run into some problems because it has grown so large and has become so successful that it has run up against the global capitalist economy and has had to start to move away from its focus on workers and, you know, providing for the workers to creating ever-growing markets, and that becomes a problem. So
yeah, so this is an example. Growth. Yeah, example of too big to survive.
And right, and let them fail. You know,
yeah.
You should do that with banks.
No.
Actually, that happened. I talked to in one of the sessions I was in, talking about community banks and state banks.
Yes,
and one of the presenters there was a successful community banker. He created a community bank, and he was too successful. And when he became valuable to others who wanted his markets, and so they offered to buy the bank out, and it was refused 3 times. And then they went into backroom deals and
they
secured
organized
51% of the shares, and it was a hostile takeover.
Yes.
So he said that at the time, you know, you can't protect yourself the way you incorporate against those kind of things. But mm-hmm. at the time, he did not think that anybody would want his community
right.
bank because it was so small.
Right.
But the problem he experienced, as you said about the worker cooperative in Spain, you become too large. You become attractive. In a threat, a competition, and they will, and the capitalistic mindset will want to either absorb you or take you out.
Yeah.
And so what we need to look at is it's small enough to go under the radar, but large enough to serve our community.
Well, also, but what about like the state employee, like credit union model? The credit unions can be large, but they have a legal framework that I don't think they're attractive to capitalist takeover because they are nonprofit, and also the co-op movement, because one of the underpinnings when you talked about changing the way that we think, this society right now is enamored of competition. Be the best, mm-hmm. be the best. And if you're the best, then somebody else is second, third, fourth best, is that, so a cooperative model instead of this competition model is to start teaching that, and that is a difficult thing, but we've got to start, because the only way that this is going to work if things get tough is that we got to learn not dog eat dog, not I'm going to be the best, but how can we work together? And how can we help each other?
And they are learning.
And the sad part of it is not being first and second. It's being the only. That you destroy all competition, that you
yes.
become a monopoly and reduce choice
mm-hmm.
and ideas, because you shrink the what the ideas are out there if you
mm-hmm.
take over. Now, the other thing that we talked about in the local democracy is to, even though Tana has her doubts about representative democracy, but I think on the local level, we need to recruit and elect progressive folk, you know, because at the local level, we saw that in Wake County. School board elections matter big time.
Yes.
Our county commissioners matter. If we are to create sustainable, resilient, and democratic communities, we're going to have the kind of folk in office that will support us and not fight us.
Yes.
And one of the things is, too, that over and over it was mentioned that as we build those communities, we have to become militant, and we have to engage in civil disobedience when the state comes and says, you cannot do this, and we need to insist on home rule. So we can keep our communities safe from interference from the larger government.
Mm-hmm.
And Tana can tell you about home rule.
Well, actually, home sovereignty.
Yeah.
We the people. We are the people, and we are the ones who are supposed to be the sovereigns, not corporations, and not our government. We elect our government to provide for us, and we have forgotten that, so that now it has come down to where corporations are controlling the government, and they make the government work for it, because we've forgotten to make it work for us. And that, the reason I am not too sanguine about representative democracy is because right now, first of all, we don't have democracy at all, but our representatives are in the pocket of,
right.
We all know this, most of our representatives, even the best meaning of them,
yes.
Find themselves hamstrung and their hands tied when it comes to doing anything.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that we will still have representatives. We need to identify those, as Heidi said, and find those who will work for us. But we need to be involved.
Right.
Each and every citizen needs to learn what it means to be sovereign, what it means to be self-governing. It doesn't mean you have to take on and go to Washington. It means, though, that you have to be aware of the issues within your community and participate, vote, and take a hand in it. We need to rethink not just our rights, but our responsibilities as citizens. And for me, that is key to any of this succeeding. Because if we're just there because of what we want or we think someone else should provide for us, it's not going to succeed.
And when you talk about voting, and this is something I'm not great about, but it comes down to these precincts that have, you know, to be involved at the precinct level, do you know where your local precinct is? Because that's where then you elect representatives to go to your county convention and then to your state convention. And a lot of us never grew up knowing about these things, and even now when you might know about it, you might say, oh, I'm too busy, and I'm certainly guilty of that. But this is, when you talk about getting local power and sovereignty, that means that kind of paying attention and not going to meeting after meeting, but coming to some of them.
Yes.
You know, going to the precincts only meet a little bit before the county convention, but find out where your precinct is. Get involved.
Yes. Yes.
Get
but just get out and
through
talk
your
with your neighbors,
yeah.
Too. You know, have a dinner party. Have coffee. Talk with people. Talk with one another about what we need in our communities.
That's right. And, you know, and I hear a lot of people are so disappointed with the Democratic Party, and I agree with that. But I say, use the political parties as organizing tools.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use them as an identity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't drink their Kool-Aid.
Right, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Well,
but also,
say a little bit more what
come
you
out
mean
to
it.
Get more parties
right.
on the ballot. We
That's
need the
right.
Greens
That's
on the
right.
ballot. We need multiple parties and not this two-party,
two
or it's
yeah.
actually
yeah.
one party with two wings
right.
system.
two right wings.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, one right, one righter.
Well, and that, again, on the local level, so many of our elections are nonpartisan.
That's true.
So, you know, there we truly have
mm-hmm.
Look at the person and mm-hmm. not whatever they're affiliated
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, you know, I said that during the convention, during the lunch, that Americans have this need for a savior, or celebrity, some kind of Superman to come and do the hard work for us. And I'm native German. You know, I know what happens when you call for one person to change, drastically change your country. At best, and I underline that, at best you will be disappointed. So consider yourself lucky that you're only disappointed. Because there are other, giving up your power to someone instead of using it yourself can have horrible, horrible consequences. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, where are we? We still have a little time
here. Got a little time left. So, you've talked about the four you went to. What about any reports, any ideas about what happened in the other five?
Well, some. Heidi was just, something I'd like to speak to is Heidi just said about, you know, nonpartisan races. But I actually had lunch one day with someone who'd been on the ballot in another state and had discovered that someone else, and this was supposed to be a nonpartisan election, but the people who actually printed and produced the voter information were not nonpartisan, and they had an agenda. And it turns out that what they wrote up was not precisely the truth about one of the candidates who turned out to have connections with some very, right-wing individuals and organizations. But those were, you know, but it was conveniently omitted and made to sound, if you read it, it sounded totally benign. But when the election came around,
but that's in the mold of Scott Walker, because he never
campaigned. That's true.
On destroying the public sector unions, and yet that's one of the first things he did.
Yes,
right.
And I don't think George Bush campaigned on invading Iraq either. But that was
one of the first things
but he said when he was walking down the hall. He said, "We're taking out Iraq." Back in the early days of his administration, shortly, you know, maybe even in January of 2001.
Yeah, they were talking about it early. It's true. It's true. It's true. And you can't always control for everything and for every bit of information that's publicized. I just want people not to be naive about nonpartisan. Find out where your information is coming from.
Yes. Too.
But I'd like to go back to what both of you are saying about local. Locally, this is where you really feel much more sense of power and involvement, because, you know, the nation is such a big nation.
Right.
It was so diverse. But here in your own community, your own county, you're getting out there and getting involved gives you much more of a sense of participation and much more of a sense that you do have some power in that. So I encourage. It's really wonderful. I've, you know, worked for Ellie in a couple of campaigns, mm-hmm. just a little bit, handed out some flyers and stuff. And it gave me such a sense of really being a part of things. And, you know, so I do want to encourage people. This is much more of a way to feel that sense of participation than national politics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. I have found nothing helps my sense of despair, helps combat it more than actually being involved.
Exactly.
Getting active. That when I sit back and throw up my hands, and when I've tried that in the past, I found myself in such depression and despair over it. And
it's real easy, you know.
Activity helps.
Yeah. Right. The old union thing is don't despair, organize.
That's right. I'm currently
don't
reading.
Don't mourn, organize, right.
I'm currently reading Get Up and Stand Up, Bruce Levine.
Oh.
And, you know, he's a psychologist. He's talking about the learned helplessness that has been kind of imposed on American people. When we decided that we prefer to be consumers instead of citizens, we gave away a lot of our power. And now that we realize that the consumer economy doesn't work anymore, we're going to have to take all that power back, because we cannot eat our stuff when it becomes hard. So one of the sessions I went into is talking was talking about the issue silos that we all in, and that's one of the things that the Democracy Convention tried to address. It, to honor all the different struggles, whether they're labor, whether they're women's rights, whether they're racial equality, whether they are nature rights, all of those struggles actually are the same struggle. Mm-hmm. We just need to connect it, because we all work for a different world that is actually responsive to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a human-sized, you know, there was talk about in Raleigh a right-sized economy. We need a human-sized economy,
mm-hmm.
in a human-sized world where it, because everything, you know, we look at it, everything is too big. You know, too big to fail, too big to
understand.
To understand, too big
too
to
complex.
Monitor, to understand. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Too complex. Wall Street's, remember, yeah. A lot of people say, this is too complex to really understand what happened.
I'm going to need to butt in here and say we're running out of time. Do we have any...
should we give some websites
any information
again?
Give out some websites. Well, is there a Democracy Convention website? I don't remember hearing that.
Well, go to Liberty Tree.
Liberty Tree.
Yeah, Google Liberty Tree. Let's see, where is it in here?
And I think
Liberty Tree. Wait a moment. Liberty Tree FDR. .org.
There's also democracyconvention.org.
Okay, but that was just for the convention.
Yeah,
and
still that convention
it is still
a lot of...
But it's still up, and the information is still there.
Okay, and I would like to also call attention to peoplescongress.org. That is a site that sounds interesting that somebody gave to me. National activists calling for a People's Congress to be held on the Mall in the late spring of 2012. So go to peoplescongress.org and check that out. Also, Democracy Rising. Heidi, take
right.
it.
Democracy Rising, this is a convention for 2012. It will run September 3 through 6 in Charlotte, 3 miles away from the Democratic Party's national convention. They will have the political circus. We will have real politics, the politics that Paul Wellstone talked about, the way we dare to imagine how we govern ourselves, what kind of communities we create, what kind of solutions we will initiate. We will not bash anyone. This is not our aim at all. We are serious about creating and discussing solutions for ourselves, for by the people,
yes.
Not by politicians or parties or
yes.
whatever.
Here.
Yeah.
Of,
okay.
By, and for the people.
Yeah. Don't forget, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, TriangleWilf.org, InternationalistBooks.org, and WCOMFM.org, all the orgs. We wish you a good afternoon. Come back and help us connect the dots next week.